This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
It's 6:07. Good evening. This is Inside Story. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, Hyde and the way it's impacted businesses and all of us. First, we'll be hearing from the Malaysia Shopping Malls Association to find out what their experience has been. And then in the second half of the show, we'll be focusing on how data can be used to combat the pandemic effectively. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you make of Hyde or the Hotspots Identification for Dynamic Engagement System and the announcements and confusion surrounding it? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. All right, it is 6:08. And okay, some background before we get right into it. We're talking today about HIDE, which is the acronym for the Hotspots Identification for Dynamic Engagement. Now, this was something that was just released last Saturday, May 8th, and it was developed, a system developed by Bank Negara Malaysia and the Health Ministry, and they used data from CPRC or MySejahtera in essence to predict if a location can potentially become a COVID-19 transmission hotspot in the next 7 days. It says that it uses big data analysis, artificial intelligence, and I think it's very important to be clear at the outset. So this is a predictive technology. The premises that were listed, the 156 premises really that it came out with, are not clusters. They were simply areas that could become clusters if preemptive measures weren't taken. And we'll get to those preemptive measures in just a bit. But essentially, the reasons stated for why HIDE exists is that it allows authorities to carry out targeted action to decrease the spread of COVID-19. It was supposed to help the public make practical decisions before traveling to a location. And it would also provide owners and operators a guideline to take preventive measures against becoming a source of a COVID-19 outbreak. And of those 156 premises, some of the hotspots identified in KL and Selangor are some of our most major, largest shopping malls, F&B premises, bazaars, and of course, when the shopping malls close, and again, we'll get to that, that also means that everybody inside can't run, right? So we saw lots of operators being completely blindsided by that. I think you may have heard some of the clips running in our news, people talking about how they were worried about their inventory, how they had to throw away flowers because people had been preparing for Mother's Day. How I think a lot of retailers had also been preparing for Raya, right? For the kinds of shopping that people do before the celebrations. And again, especially for food outlets, had to deal with the issue of wastage. Now, to that point about closing. So on May 8th itself, Kari Jamaluddin, Mosti Minister, had said that HIDE is an early warning system. And so the locations listed don't need to close unless authorities require them to do so. But following very shortly on that, Senior Minister Ismail Sabri ordered for a 3-day closure of the locations listed immediately. And then that also resulted in a separate spiral because the government then kind of went back and forth about what immediately meant. So whether that means May 9th, May 10th, in the end, they settled on May 9th. So from yesterday onwards, 3 days. Now, as an update, Kari has said that the government will be discussing the SOPs required for the premises listed under HIDE in a National Security Council meeting. So we'll wait for that. But that's just the background. Subsequently, the response, I have to say, was not fantastic. So the Malaysia Shopping Malls Association, Malaysia Retailers Association, Malaysia Retail Chain Association released a joint statement urging the ministry to suspend the HIDE announcement until the information released is accompanied by a clear basis. And it mentioned that the data does not include manual recording. It only collects information from MySejahtera, and that decreases its accuracy. That point about it coming from MySejahtera has subsequently come under even more questioning because people want to know exactly what you mean, right? So are you only looking at places that have high foot traffic? If you look at the daily cluster reports and how many of those are from shopping malls, from retail spots, then again, it doesn't necessarily support a 3-day closure. I think the question of what happens within that 3-day closure is also something else, right? What occurs? Because I think for Hyde or for over the weekend, what it meant is that the crowds or the people who would normally have been able to go in a staggered, safe manner to these malls were then pushed out to other places to do their groceries, to get necessities and the like. And even around the country, the response has been different. So the Sabah National Security Council allowed for, I think, 3 of the malls that were listed under Hyde to continue operating, but with a limited number of patrons. And if we go further back and we look at what was said in the past, the DG, Tan Sri Dr. Nur Hisham Abdullah, had previously said that the MOH wouldn't identify areas of infection to prevent stigmatization. And so this is where we find ourselves, I think, with more questions than answers about how exactly the risk is being assessed, because we know where the data comes from, but not necessarily what it contains. And we're seeing the fallout, really, from businesses. So we want to know what you think. What do you make of Hyde? Were you affected by it? Do you think that it perhaps needs to be addressed? You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be speaking with Tan Sri Teo Chiang Kok, who is the president of the Malaysia Shopping Malls Association. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:16 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. We're talking today about Hyde, which is a system developed by Bank Negara Malaysia, or developed with Bank Negara Malaysia and the Health Ministry, that aims to predict if a location can potentially become a COVID-19 transmission hotspot in the next 7 days. Initially, when it was announced on Saturday, 156 premises were listed, including some of the biggest malls and bazaars, F&B premises in KL and Selangor. Subsequently, they had to close for 3 days. There was also confusion around the announcements itself. So that's what we're discussing today. We want to know if you have thoughts on this system. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now crossing over, though, to Tan Sri Teo Chiang Kok, who is the president of the Malaysia Shopping Malls Association. Tan Sri, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Oh, thanks, Lynn, for having me.
So when the Hyde, the list of premises from Hyde was released over the weekend, when did you first hear about it and how did you feel?
Well, the first time we heard about Hyde was when our MOSTI minister introduced Hyde. At the time, we were really curious on how the mechanism for the Hyde works. And actually, we were quite disturbed by the listing of so many shopping centres. Well, we concluded that Hyde is only compiling the number of scans in MySejahtera that were by those with not low risk category. The numbers we feel are just absolute numbers without any reference to the total number of scans entering a premise. So we believe this is misleading, especially for shopping malls where visitors are expected to come by continuous flow of transient shoppers. Compared this to an office, the number of scans would most probably be quite static because most of them would be for those already working in the office building. So we believe that the comparing of height calculation is not comparing apple with apple. That was our first feeling when we learned about height.
And the list is one thing, but subsequently there were announcements about first, you know, that you wouldn't have to close, and then after that, that a 3-day closure is expected. What was that like, and were you given early notice by the government about the closure?
No, actually, that is something that we were taking by surprise, indeed. And especially when the MKN minister said that it should be closed certamurta without any discussion or without any preparation. So it came as a big shock to us, yeah.
And can you talk to us about how the closure impacted your business and even being on the list and the members of the association as well?
Well, I think we can go back on history when MCO1 and MCO2 were announced. Immediately the next day, the footfall drops to 10 to 15%. And now, with this sudden closure, I think we will suffer the same kind of consequences.
Prior to this, what was business like this year? You know, were you seeing recovery?
Well, over the last few months, there was steady recovery. And just before this sudden closure, we were hitting about 70 to 80% footfall. So we are pretty frustrated with this directive to close. And we think that they will set us back quite badly this time because the impact of financial losses is very heavy, and the situation of a lot of our traders and our tenants are different. They are already very financially weakened, and this one may be the what they call the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak.
And if we return to the announcement to close and the suddenness of it, what did you have to do in order to manage your vendors and the outlets within the mall that would also have to close?
Well, we were having discussions with the Ministry of Domestic Trade to try and understand further the reason for the closure. And we appreciate very much their understanding that there is a balance between life and livelihoods. But after that, only it was very late in the night on Saturday that we were able to inform our tenants. Not quite fully, but we use social media to circulate the directive. And even that, we had to turn away quite a number of tenants the next day because they were still unaware of it. But we are very worried because the tenants are also very worried because there's no preparation. A lot of people have fresh food and fresh fruits and especially flowers because it's Mother's Day.
Mm.
And all these are very perishable goods. So we are pretty frustrated with the suddenness of the whole situation, especially Sunday is the last Sunday for shopping before Hari Raya.
So was there any consultation with shopping malls and retailers before they officially launched Hyde?
No, there was not even an inkling of this directive. And especially, it was double shock because just hours earlier, when our MOSTI minister announced, we were assured that being listed, which is already very devastating, does not automatically means needing to close, and that it is only an early alert to see what mitigating actions we can take, and that the decision to close will be done on a case-by-case basis. So it came as a very big shock to the whole industry, yes.
So what is supposed to happen or what is supposed to be done on your part during this three-day closure?
Well, the reason given to us was the 3 days is for us to do sanitization. But we are surprised because since MCO started, or since the COVID pandemic started, we have been diligently complying with the SOP. We have been cleaning and sanitizing every day. And even some common touch areas, we sanitize 3 or 4 times a day. So to say that we need to close for 3 days to sanitize, that's not fly. The reasons are not fly to us.
And are you concerned about how the locations and the malls that have been identified on Hyde are going to be perceived by the public in future?
Well, that's something to worry about because it gives the impression that shopping malls are more dangerous than other less formal shopping areas like shops, standalone shops and bazaars. And with the malls closed, there'll be also a big rush to all these shops and bazaars now that they are closed as well. And it may cause more infection at the end of the day. Yeah.
Has the association reached out to the ministry? Are there going to be any discussions?
Well, we had a long discussion on Saturday night with the Ministry of Domestic Trade. And this evening, we will be having a Zoom meeting with MITI. And we hope that we can find middle ground to meet the needs of the SOPE. At the same time, hope to bring down the figures of the COVID infection. At the same time, not to damage the economic livelihood of the industry.
And what are you hoping to see next in terms of how Hyde is managed?
Well, we would like to have a further understanding, a deep understanding on how the data is collected. We feel that while shopping centre, for instance, we are very diligent in collecting the data or scanning every visitor that comes in, other areas like standalone shops and other bazaars, for instance, there's less stringent on collecting such data. And because of the differences, incomplete amount of data, it could be because of that there is a distortion in the results. So we hope that after these 3 days, let us open unconditionally. And at the same time, give us opportunity to understand the system, refine the system, make sure that the data put out is accurate and precise and does not mislead and cause undue fear or panic to the public.
Tan Sri, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
That was Tan Sri Teo Chiang Kok, who is the president of the Malaysia Shopping Malls Association, talking about the impact on malls, really, being listed, so many of them being listed as part of the 156 premises that were under Hyde and that subsequently had to close for 3 days. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on the system itself and whether you have suggestions, perhaps. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. So Rose says, hide and seek ought not be something you play during MCO in a pandemic, planning your district-friendly grocery shop and turning up only to find it shut. Still, less mall or supermarket traffic closed for legitimate COVID reasons is a good thing. And I've been trying to find a way to work in a hide and seek pun and I haven't quite found it. But I think you're absolutely right in that when we are all constrained to our districts and trying to work, right, very much within the limitations of what the MCO is, trying to be compliant, and we know of the grocers that are near to us with large parking, large amounts of parking, you know, we can get in and out. Most of the time, it's going to be a shopping mall. And I think that having it shut is difficult. And this comes back to that point about whether or not it should be a blanket thing, right? Whether you close the mall as a whole or whether you are actually using the data to drill down into specifics to look at the exact spots that need to be shut. So you can let us know though what you think. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back with more of your messages and also to take a look at what other role data could play in helping us fight the pandemic. You're listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:37 and you're listening to Inside Story with Lynn. We're talking today about Hyde, which is a system developed by Bank Negara Malaysia and the Health Ministry that aims to predict if a location could potentially become a COVID-19 transmission hotspot in the next 7 days. So this was rolled out on Saturday. It resulted in confusing announcements and 156 premises closing for 3 days. Now, those 3 days also takes into account Mother's Day, which was yesterday, as well as as we heard our guest say earlier, the last weekend before Raya for people to prepare. So, of course, there's been just a lot of confusion in response to this. Businesses have been suffering. We heard earlier from one of those businesses, or rather from Tan Sri Teo Chiang Kok, who is the president of the Malaysia Shopping Malls Association, since so many shopping malls were on that list. And, of course, so many outlets and vendors within those malls also had to close. Now, we've been asking you for your thoughts, and you can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We have a lot of messages, but I wanted to read two of them before we get to our next guest, because I think it's quite relevant. So Jimny says, this list, you know, it just makes people go, yeah. The thing is that the list is only names. It should include more data, like percentage and who came up with the list at all, which organization or company is behind this, or else, you know, the list just sounds like people Googled malls in the Klang Valley. So for what it's worth, again, organization, company, not sure, but the collaboration was between the Ministry of Health, which you would expect because they do have that data. And it's why the assumption, the working assumption at the moment, is that it's based on MySejahtera check-ins. And then a more, I'm not sure exactly how the involvement is here, but also Bank Negara Malaysia. So those are the people who are involved in putting it together. But Jimny, I think your point about including more data is really interesting. We also have Fayad, who says, since the MCO 3.0 directive was enacted, we've had more variants of SOPs than COVID-19. Zero working hours closure forced the public to go to smaller grocers, incapable of accommodating such crowds. Can we get disclosure on the research methodology for height? Because if the cluster's location aren't taken into consideration, I'd love to know if it was anecdotal instead of big data. Are they just assuming based on footfalls per square feet? These are necessary to be disclosed so that businesses can anticipate how they're going to manage it. Ministries are working in silo. The differing comments from the ministers show that the ministries are doing that, and they need to decentralise their work but centralise their communication. People are suffering. And you know, that point about communication, Fayad, is definitely something that we hope to cover with the ministers themselves. But that point about data is really also what we want to expand on in the second half of the show, because we're seeing countries around the world, ourselves included, trying so hard to use data to manage the situation, to figure out next steps, to parse it all in a way that makes sense in terms of planning. And I think sometimes that results in what we're talking about today, in Hyde. And so we want to understand a bit more about data and the role it plays. But we also want to know, keep those thoughts coming. What do you make of the Hyde system? How do you think it's impacted you, us? You can call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We are now joined, though, to talk about that point about information and data by Dr. Rachel Gong, Senior Research Associate at Khazanah Research Institute. Rachel, pleasure speaking with you.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So let's start with an overview. How well would you say data has been used throughout the pandemic, especially in terms of planning out actions and next steps?
I actually don't think that the data that we have has been used very effectively in the decision-making process, as you know, the messages that you were just highlighting when it comes to things like the MCO and SOPs. Even if there actually has been a lot of data crunching and big data analysis happening in the background, it's not being well communicated to the public. And as far as I know, these analyses are not being corroborated by independent researchers or academics. So there's not really a lot of transparency or testing, you know, rigorous testing of the analysis being made available to the public either.
And we're going to talk about both those things, particularly the public. But I also wanted to know, are you aware of whether there's been a lot of sharing between the various agencies? Because managing the pandemic is, of course, a multi-agency situation.
Right, right. I think it's well known that the government tends to be protective of data generally, I mean, in case it's misused or mishandled. And in particular for medical records and health data, those are especially sensitive. So I think NYH has been, you know, very careful about what sort of information it releases and who has access to COVID-19 patient records or case records and that sort of data. If I recall, at the start of the pandemic, the ministry was releasing a lot more granular data that did enable data analysts to come up with tools. I mean, for example, Malaysia Kini's Kini Lab was able to develop their COVID-19 tracker. But then at some point, the data started to dwindle a little bit. And even, I think, late last year, MOH stopped sharing granular data on COVID-19 with the Selangor COVID Task Force. Mm-hmm. And that caused some difficulty for the team that was in Selangor trying to work on Selangor and other data tools, to try and get information out to the public. I do think earlier this year they came to a data sharing agreement, and that's how now the hotspot mapping that is available on Selangor was able to be developed.
So how much access does the general public have to the various data points, aside from what's released by the Ministry daily, which, as you say, has gotten less granular over time?
General public, I would say not a lot of access. You would have to be very informed, very, very determined, very media and digital media literate in order to be able to track down where all the various sources are. And if you're not really into data or statistics or that sort of tracking thing, it's really hard to see what the trends in Malaysia might be. For example, how testing rates or case rates have been ebbing and flowing in across different states. Because we get, we get these daily snapshots, either in My Sejahtera or in the news, but not a lot of people are really kind of stringing them together and doing some sort of time series analysis to make sense of them. I mean, the efforts of, again, the Kini News Lab and Code Blue, I believe, has also worked on that, notwithstanding. So if you're, as a member of the general public, just trying to figure out what's going on, you have to do a lot of your own work to try to stay up to date with the information. And that's just a lot to ask of people.
Would you say, though, that there is a hunger from the general public? Or rather, how responsive are we in general to data? So if data was given on COVID-19 hotspots, would people start avoiding those areas or perhaps having different sorts of conversations about them?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's getting harder and harder to tell. I suspect that, in MCO 1.0 last March, people were generally much more careful and reactive to the data because we knew so little about the virus at that time. So any bit of information was something that, we needed to act on and we could take precautionary measures. But as the pandemic evolved and as scientists learned more about the virus and became better informed, we actually see that misinformation about the virus and was also spreading. And then you had all these conspiracy theories about the dangers of masks and, 5G and things like that, and alternative methods of protecting yourself, like, garlic and warm water and so on. And people just became less sure of what they should believe. And with all the ongoing sort of announcements of MCOs and SOPs and then changing SOPs and then heightened SOPs and different things applying to different states, the confusion just increased and people started letting down their guard. So I think right now, while we may want to have more data so that we can act responsibly, there's just a lot of pandemic fatigue going on and not a lot of trust in our various sources of information. So that's, it's really hard to say whether people look at a source of information and go, right, let's act according to this, or they see it and they just dismiss it. I'd like to think that people would respond to the data and to the science. For example, we know that the virus is airborne, and so people shouldn't be in enclosed spaces for long periods of time, especially if they're going to be talking or singing. But then we see in the news about karaoke centres continuing to be packed. It doesn't sound like the public is making these data-based decisions, even if we do have them.
I want to look at height specifically, because that's the premise of our show today. How would you evaluate how good a system it is?
I think at the moment, honestly, evaluating height is so hard to do because there's not a lot of information that's been communicated about it. I think the comments about making the methods much clearer are, very well founded. I think actually Tony Pua has been cited in multiple news outlets today calling for the suspension of height because we don't have enough of this information available to evaluate it. So at the very least, I think The method, including the model's assumptions and the selection of what variables and data points go into the model, should be made public so that researchers can scrutinize it and evaluate if this is a model that makes sense and should be used. It's a very important system that has, you know, huge ramifications for the country, for the country's mobility and the country's economy. And so there really should be some independent testing or independent review of the system. And the findings of that review should also be made public before the system is implemented much further. As people have been saying, it sounds that there's really a lack of clarity among different government ministries and agencies as to what the hotspot list represents.
So if we look at the raw data that we have on hand, which I imagine is just a tremendous amount, what are the benefits therefore to using AI in order to parse it, to make sense of it? What specific areas would AI be especially helpful in?
Wow, I think that could be a whole separate conversation on its own. There are a lot of benefits to using this data for, you know, in all sorts of areas. Let's just begin with, I think in terms of managing hotspots and things like that, yes, the AI kind of predicting where there might be outbreaks is something that's worth exploring. But there are so many black box issues about AI. And by this, I mean that even if you have the model out, if you're not clear on exactly where there might be gaps or over-dependencies in the data, you're not quite sure how the model is going to interpret that data. And you can't figure it out from looking at the algorithm because it's just this black box of, I know these variables are important, but I don't know exactly how the computing is going to produce this list. But having said that, if you could actually kind of go through and deal with some of the assumptions and biases, like, okay, we know that malls are just going to have a lot of footfall and a lot of traffic, and therefore it looks like it's a crowded, enclosed space, but that's only because there's one entry point and one exit point. But when you actually get into a mall, it's actually quite open. Mm. And so there may not be as much crowding as the algorithm is predicting. Then you can start to sort of go, okay, here are the gaps and we need to therefore maybe underweight this a little bit and overweight other things. You need to see maybe how long, you know, maybe it's not just number of check-ins, but you need to see how long each check-in stays at a particular place. And then you can see, oh, actually, well, they're in and out in, you know, half an hour to an hour. It's not like going into an office or a factory where you're there for 8 hours in this same space. So things like that, I think, can be expanded to, you know, you'll see AI basically being used in all sorts of sectors, from manufacturing to medicine to urban planning. And I think what we should really be asking is not just what are the benefits, but what are the dangers and risks of using AI without, you know, thorough consultation and testing. That's something I think we need to be thinking about.
Rachel, we started our chat with you saying that you don't think that at the moment the use of data has been all that effective in terms of managing the pandemic. And I wanted to ask, essentially, what else would you like to see, right? How could we be doing better in this area? And what level of transparency, for example, should we be practicing?
Sure. I actually think, let me start with two policy recommendations that my colleagues at KRI, Ashraf Shahuddin and Gregory Ho, have been calling for. First, that there is more government data made open so that different people can have access to it to do the kind of research and cross-checking that is necessary. And second, for better fact-checking tools to be employed, especially on social media, to make sure that the information that's getting out into the public is actually valid. And these are, of course, not just pandemic-specific policy recommendations. We are in the midst of significant digital transformation that puts data front and center of the way we're making decisions. And so in terms of understanding how we're using data, people have been focused on data privacy and data transparency. But I think it's part of the much bigger concern around data governance and how we think about what sort of data is collected, regulations about how it can be used, who can use it, and how long it can be kept. So all these things need to be thought about when we're trying to improve the way that we use data.
Rachel, thank you so much for speaking with us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Rachel Gong, Senior Research Associate at Khazanah Research Institute, giving us really quite a comprehensive look at the ways in which we could be using data to combat the pandemic more effectively. This is coming, of course, as we talk about HIDE, which was a system developed to predict if a location can potentially become a transmission hotspot for COVID-19 in the next week. This resulted, after its announcement on Saturday, in a lot of confusion and 156 premises having to close for 3 days. So we've been asking you for your thoughts, and we will come back to look through the messages. Keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.